Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now you're welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown, Season 3, Episode 5. Celtic, 3 from 3, and still top of the table. I want to start off the podcast with a reading from the Gospel of Derek McGuinness. We've got to try and to give them something to think about. Let them know it's not going to be all their own way. If we can strike that first blow and plant that seed of doubt, that goes a long way, not only for us, but by being really confident, but also by affecting them. Kilmarnock were 3-0 down at halftime in that game. 5-0 Celtic against Kilmarnock in Rugby Park, and it was a show that Celtic put on. Two bicycle kicks, one from our centre-back and one from our Greek striker that we definitely should get rid of as soon as we possibly can. And then a goal from Cara Starfelt as well to top it all off. Juco James and Alan Morrison are with me as always. James, Giacomakis, just get rid of him. Just get rid of him. Out the door.
Trade him for toilet paper. That's the the analytical conclusion, without question.
No, look, we'll talk about all that later on in the podcast, because it is actually an interesting conversation. Loads of transfer situations going on at the minute as well. Celtic seem to be buying a new player to add to their attack. Sid Haksabanovic is how we're pronouncing it for now. From Ruben,
it's better than your French, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'll say he seems to be joined from Ruben Kazan for a fee of about £5 million. We'll touch on that later on, but we'll start with the game at Rugby Park. It was a return to the Scottish Premiership for Kilmarnock, an absolutely nightmarish one coming up against the Scottish champions. James, first take for you. Two bicycle kicks in this game. A Jota absolute screamer. Derek McGuinness thinks that at least 3 out of the 4 goals were lucky. Were they?
No. Well, lucky in the sense that their keeper was absolutely dreadful. So that was part of the equation. But no, I mean, we talked about this last week in preparation for the game, that the likely McGuinness game plan would be a train wreck for them. Shockingly, he largely pursued his normal game plan for the most part. And, you know, the script played out pretty much as expected. Now, the entertainment value of the ways we scored were spectacular. So that was great. But yeah, as far as it being a drubbing and a well-supported drubbing, meaning that this was not one of those fluky, you score 5 goals on not creating a ton of great chances. This was a legit drubbing, and it's nice when your opposition is relatively clueless, and I think he continues to be.
Yeah, so Derek McGuinness obviously has taken some slack for his post-match comments in terms of talking about the type of goals that they shipped, and he said that Jota's strike was savable in his opinion. Disappointed that he conceded goals from set plays, especially the nature of the goals, one being a bicycle kick from Celtic's centre-back, another being a tap-in from Celtic centre-back who scored his first goal for Celtic. And then, again, I don't think the keeper covers himself in glory for Giacomakis' bicycle kick either. But, Alan, this is sort of the conversation that we're going to be having across the season a lot, is that the opposition management might not be happy with the type of goals that Celtic score, because I feel like Celtic will score a lot of kind of, you know, goals like we scored at the weekend, but that comes from consistently creating so many chances that eventually one or two of these are going to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to be a theme for the season, as you say, because it looks like the league is going to be as bipolar as it perhaps has ever been, unfortunately. I think Celtic are increasingly consistent. I'll keep using the word consistent consistently, because it's the consistency that is to me, the most impressive aspect of Celtic over the last 35 games. And obviously, you know, we've got European battle-hardened opponents. And I think the top two teams, unfortunately, are going to struggle to drop any points against the rest of the league, sadly, much as I'd like to see a deeper and more competitive league. So I think there's going to be more days like this. And as James rightly said, it wasn't a fluke. If you look at the XG, I mean, my 20th century XG model actually comes out very close to this, to the latest shiny stats bomb XG model that apparently uses, you know, the precise, you know, direction and speed of the wind, and, you know, whether the player's hair gets in their eyes, and it has all these factors built into it. It's incredible. But it comes up with pretty much the same XG as I did in my crappy little model, which was, you know, Celtic around about 3.2 and Killy sort of about, I had them at 0.8. I think they had them at 0.4. So again, there's that 2.5 XG difference. If we keep posting that in games, we're going to win nearly all games. You know, outrageous luck, notwithstanding. Other thing that I liked was that of the 20 shots that we had, 15 were inside the box, and I think that's a theme that we're seeing this season improving. It was something I kept an eye on last season. We were always a bit behind the Rangers in terms of that particular metric. They were far more effective at taking shots inside the box. I think they were like something like 72%. We were at something like 65%. This season, I think we're in most games, I think we're taking the majority of shots inside the box, notwithstanding Jota's effort. And listen, I can't fault the goalkeeper, because that ball did not dip in trajectory at all when it flew into the net. He hit it that hard. It was a bit like Hatate's against Craig Gordon, and people were criticising Gordon. It's like, yeah, but the ball sped past him so quickly, it never actually dipped, it never lost velocity. That's how hard it was hit. So I don't blame the goalkeeper. He got something on it, but it was going so fast. So, yeah, interesting game in terms of, you know, some of the aspects of play around the plastic we can come on to. Maybe I think some players adjusted to it better than others. So that'll be something we can maybe touch on.
I thought that of all the goals to criticize the goalkeeper for, it probably is maybe Giakoumakis's bicycle kick that goes through his legs.
You know, 3 yards away. I mean,
yeah,
and the ball comes down at him at quite a velocity. I couldn't criticize him for that either, to be honest. Yeah.
It is hard to analyze these games when it is such a drumming, and Celtic were, like, you know, by far and away the most dominant side. So something new that we're seeing with Celtic this year is probably set piece proficiency, especially going forward. Is that three games now in a row that Celtic have scored from a set play?
And four goals from corners.
Yeah.
And one against. So and one against.
Last year, it was a criticism that we were just absolutely no threat from these corners. So what are we seeing differently?
Not true. Well, so sorry, James, I've just written an article on this. For the Celtic Way. I wrote an article for the Celtic Way. So if you want to switch off now, you know. it's not been published yet, so I'm giving out state secrets. yeah, listen, actually, Celtic last season, for all those, I know all of you are subscribers to Celtic Way and will no doubt be reading the article anyway, but for those, the few of you that won't, Celtic actually, as far as corners are concerned, it's quite interesting. We've actually improved on our expected goals from corners last season. Last season was the best season in the last 5 years, which I've got data for, in terms of expected goals from corners. I think it averaged something like 0.22 goals per 90 minutes for. And we also had the best expected XG against as well. So I think Postecoglou, what you're seeing here again is the power of organisation, because defending and attacking corners is all about organisation and people knowing their jobs and what they're doing. You don't have to have a bunch of six-footers. It's far better to have a bunch of wee lads who know what they're doing than it is to have a bunch of big lads who don't have a plan, right? So although we didn't score many goals from corners, we were a little bit under at par. I mean, the XG suggested we should have done better, and maybe we're seeing a bit of that sort of reversion now. So I think corners are something we're getting stronger at, and I think the reason for it is we've actually got at least three really good set piece takers in Turnbull, O'Reilly and Yota. So the delivery's good, and if the delivery's good, again, you saw the one that Kyogo got in the end of. Great movement and speed of thought and organization can mitigate not having someone that's 6'5", for example. Yeah. So good movement, good speed. And it's also the speed of play. So we tend to take corners very quickly, and a lot of them are short, but we still get the ball into the box, and we tend to not let teams settle. So we're actually getting more corners. We've got more corners per game under Postecoglou than we have done in the last 5 years, because we press so high and we force more corners. And our deliveries are very good, and I think
it's about one extra a game too. Yeah, so yeah, it's like almost a 40% increase. Yeah, sorry to break in, but it's
no, it's fine. Thank you. So yeah, all in all, I know it's one of these, as I say, sacred cows of supporters of all clubs that think that they don't score enough goals from corners, and they always think they concede too many from corners. Celtic are actually improving in this regard under the Postecoglou.
It's an interesting point as well, because James, I'll get your thoughts on this as well. Celtic don't necessarily in the league need to be all that great at corners, because they dominate games and they score goals without set pieces. But it just shows you the advantage of having that organization where you think they're not just resting on their laurels that they're going to score from outfield. They can get goals from corners as well and set pieces.
Yeah, this comes back to the optimization conversation that I always have and that I've talked about. Really what Celtic need to be doing in order to be competitive in the European sphere is to expand how much we're dominating domestically. And I think set pieces is one way that translates very importantly as we move into the European theater is, you know, when we're not going to be as ball dominant, we're going to be a little bit more counterattacking and, maybe against some of these heavyweights that we'll face in pot one and pot two, in particular from the Champions League, you know, it might be a set piece that, you know, kind of like, you know, it's turning the tables, basically. A lot of the domestic opposition that we face, even if it's a Hearts or a Dundee United, that's typically how they're going to, win points against us and get a result. And I think to some degree, we might see some of that as we go into Europe. So it's encouraging. I think the other part, and we've talked about this, is the people on the end of the deliveries have been pretty good at it so far this season. Starfelt gladly got his first goal. It wasn't off a header, not surprisingly. So that's been an issue for him, and that kind of followed from Iyer being pretty poor in that regard. But one thing I just wanted to touch upon, because this, to Alan's point, one of the things he said before on Stats Bomb's model, one of the big differentiators in the Stats Bomb XG model is, and it makes a material difference in Scotland in particular, and like League One in England, is they model the height of the ball on aerial shots, right? So whereas like Alan's, what'd you call it, 20th century XG model? I like that. I love that. Doesn't do something like that. So it's basically, where is the player on the pitch and was it a cross? That's basically, you know, the characteristics that are used to derive the chance, the XG. Whereas the Stats Bomb model takes into account, okay, you know, was this a ball that was way above the recipient's head, and they kind of had to, you know, it was one of those ones that just brushes off of their hair because it was too high. That in the old model, that's going to get the same value as someone that's, you know, right at the right height and a crushing shot. So the reason why I get into that is that last year on corners, it was an improvement. Some of that's because of volume, as we talked about, but it was 0.28 XG in corners per game. And so far this season, that's at 0.52, right? So that, and we've scored 1.33 goals, so four, as Alan said. So we're not only getting, you know, really good chances, and that's probably an unrealistic level. Like that's, you know, I'd be happy if that drops to like 0.35. That would be really, really good. And if we're able to score at that rate, that would be really, really good, particularly as we go into Europe. But so we've had a three-game period here where the deliveries are great, and that's really gauged by that StatsBomb XG, right? So at 0.52, that means that these deliveries are really coming in at a height that the people striking them have a really good chance at putting, you know, a good shot on goal. And then that's where you get into the nuances, how much it was a good shot, and then how much of it was bad goalkeeping. And that's a whole different conversation. But yeah, so far so good. And I hope it continues. And certainly directionally, very positive.
Hmm. Starfelt was absolutely delighted with himself, as was the rest of his teammates, which was nice to see. Was he offside?
No.
I didn't hear that was a question.
I wasn't even. There was somebody on the. I mean, I know that he. It was ridiculous, wasn't it? He had time to sort of get the ball, look at it, decide which foot to hit it. Then I think he combed his hair and he got his sandwich out of his bag, had a bit of an.
It's beautiful hair too.
And then the ball came back, and then he sort of shuffled around to the other foot, and still no Kilmarnock player came near him. But I don't think he was offside. I think there was somebody on the other post.
Okay. Okay, maybe I was just watching it a little bit wrong, but he looked a little bit offside to me. But we won't take it away from him.
Yeah, that was a lovely celebration, though. I think that was great to see, actually, from the team. I think it showed a real spirit and camaraderie. It was, you know, it was good. They were enjoying it, right? It was good fun. Mm. I think it was I think it was lovely.
As well as the team, Ange as well looked absolutely delighted from
him. He actually smiled.
Yeah. It's a rare thing. Look, there's this game, it wasn't all domination from Celtic. Like, there was a period where Celtic sort of had a lull just after halftime where Kilmarnock, you know, didn't really have that many chances, but they were preventing Celtic from playing the smooth attacking football that they would want to do. Substitutions made a big difference in this game because the quality of substitutions that Celtic have at their disposal compared to other teams in this league, especially with the five subs rule, it really does make a difference. And it's really, like, even early days this season in the first three games, it's showing that Celtic have these really good players coming off the bench. So Abada came on, Giacomakis came on, Aaron Moy came on. I think we're basically seeing what Aaron Moy's role is, and that is sort of the Beaton role from last year, coming on as a sub for Cal McGregor in the midfield. But the substitutions in this game completely changed the flow of the game and the way that Celtic wanted it to go. They took domination and possession. They were attacking a lot more, and they scored more goals. And Alan, you've sort of touched on this already, and this will be a theme for the rest of the season, is that Celtic probably have an unfair advantage here with these five subs.
Yeah, I mean, as I said last week, again, another article I wrote on this was that if you look at the expected scoring contribution of players when they come off the bench, it's much higher than their average scoring contribution. So what we mean by that is it's actually easier to come off the bench as a forward player, and you probably create better chances and get better scoring opportunities than if you start the game and you know, slog yourself for 60 minutes sort of thing. You also let you come on and get the glory in the last 30 type of thing. So and then Celtic, as you said, have got just better resources to come off the bench, and looks like we're going to potentially get another attacking player in the door shortly as well. So that quality, that gulf in terms of what Celtic can bring off the bench, and the fact that you can replace half your outfield team is huge. I mean, SofaScore do a little momentum bar, a little momentum graph of the game, which I always like, and I save it and sometimes share it, but I save it for every game. And actually, Kilmarnock had a little spell in the middle of the first half when it was 1-0 that was looking a bit dicey. They were starting to get crosses in the box, they're starting to get corners and long throws that looked a bit iffy for a moment. And then the second goal came along, and that pretty much kind of killed it. And then, like you say, Celtic were kind of drifting a bit by the middle of the second half. And then when you see you can see on the graph the moment the subs come on, and then it's just complete Celtic domination. It just transformed the whole energy and purpose of the team. And as I say, I think we'll see a lot of late goals already this season. Both the Rangers and Celtic have scored a ridiculous number of goals in the last 10 minutes of games. As I say, sadly, it's just another lever by which the top two will, unfortunately, you know, dominate the rest of the league, I think.
Yeah, I actually forgot. Alan and I had a Twitter exchange with somebody on this specific question, and I went off and I did the the work, and then I never shared it with anybody. So apologies. I don't remember who it was on Twitter, but if they're watching, they listen or watch this, I apologize. So it's interesting. So I did a basic, there's a little tool, and this is Y Scout data, so it's not great, but at least it's apples to apples. And I compared it against some other, you know, what I like, you know, the normal clubs that I like to go to at looking at kind of cross league stuff, you know, Ajax, Red Bull Salzburg, Red Star Belgrade, those, you know, Zagreb, Dynamo Zagreb, relative to Celtic. And what's interesting, so since the 15-16 season, which is when Y Scout started, so I just assume 94 minutes for total playing time. So that's about 21% of the minutes of the game, that you know, from the 75th minute until the 94th minute. And so this is the percentage of XG. Since then, it was only 13% in Dyla's last season. So that's, you know, way below from a proportional perspective. And then I'm going to round it, 22%, 24%, 22%, 21%. The rough season of 2021 was 20%, and last season was 24%. Now, what's interesting, I find this the most interesting, the amount of XG we conceded. Okay, so you think about that proportionality, you would think, oh, okay, 21% would be proportional to the amount of minutes. 27%, 26%, 27%, 24%, 28%, 21%, until this last season when we went down to 20%, right? So there's, as teams fatigue, again, this is kind of logical, just generally, teams fatigue, you would think that the space opens up and more scoring would tilt in that direction. And I, you know, it certainly is evidenced in that. But what we did last season was improve on both sides, and to do it in a way that actually, when I benchmark it to a lot of these other clubs, moves us much more in the direction of an Ajax, a Salzburg, which again is encouraging, because that's, you know, clearly the direction that we want to be going as we you know, look to reascend to European relevance.
Just to add to the so a bit more stats around late goals or whatever. So Celtic and the Rangers together have scored 10 goals between them in the last 20 minutes of games this season. The whole rest of the league have only managed 10 goals in the last 20 minutes of games. Neither Celtic or the Rangers have conceded a single goal in the last 20 minutes of games this season. And as I say, this is where I think you're going to see some games running away from teams. It's going to be, as I say, really, really difficult for any of the rest of the group to take points, given the subs and given the relative strengths of the squads.
I know a lot of people kind of throw stones at the Scottish League, particularly for this sort of reason. But to keep myself interested in this game, I actually had some money on Celtic to score.
You degenerate.
Over two goals in the second half, because I thought that's when Celtic were going to dominate the most. And Celtic were 3-0 up before halftime. I was like, God, this game's over. They're just going to take their foot off the gas. And then Kilmarnock started to take a little bit of bit more control in the second half. I'm cursing Celtic. 3-0 up, like cruising in the game. I'm cursing them, saying they're, you know, they're shite bags, they're not good enough, they're going to get absolutely destroyed in the Champions League. Then about 5 minutes later, after Giacomacca scored, I was a happy man. So that was how I watched the Celtic game at the weekend. But you mentioned the plastic pitch, Alan, in the intro there. This was something that is brought up every single year. People hate it, people love it, people think it shouldn't be part of the game. Ex-pundits or ex-players hate it. Does it make that much of a difference to these games? Injury-wise, we all know the risk that involves playing in these plastic pitches at this point. But in terms of the impact on actual football matters, did it have any impact?
Well, firstly, there's no evidence that I can see that playing on these pitches increases your risk of injury. I've not seen anything. I can't find any evidence of that, any papers written or what have you. So that's a perception, I think, but I'm not sure.
It's there have been pieces written about this, but it's in the same way that running on the road increases your risk injury of picking up a knee injury or joint pain, things like that. It's not conclusively proven, but there's enough evidence to point you in the direction that, yes, okay, playing on these plastic pitches can cause similar issues as running on the road.
And these have the dispersion in quality on these things is huge at this point, meaning that some of the most modern plastic pitches have cushioning under them, and you know, they've really and again, I don't like them, but you know, so you see that in other sports too, where they're still using some of these. And you know, if you go back and watch an MLB game from 1985 and you look at the parking lot that they were playing on in a lot of the stadiums versus what's the artificial turf in the few places that they still have it, it's completely different. I think the issue with Kilmarnock is they're more like a 1985 turf. It's more like a parking lot. So I just wanted to throw that in there, because playing on those old, horrible concrete, basically, surfaces without any cushioning, they did, I think, increase those wear and tear injuries.
It was concrete covered in carpet. That was
exactly what it was.
No, so listen, so and I think James had done some work previously that showed that there's really no difference in results in terms of Celtic. Don't see their results worse.
Outside of that one evil place.
Oh, outside of that was literally a carpet. I'm sure it was like peeling up and everything when in Gibraltar. Yeah, and every team plays on that pitch, don't they? It's like the one pitch in the whole island, and everybody plays there. But what it does do, without an absolute shadow of a doubt, is it does reduce the quality of the game. And what do I mean when I talk about quality? I mean there's less passing, there's less accurate passing, there's less pack passing. So just the general quality of the game is lower as a result. Now, it's the same for both teams. I suspect both teams kind of suffer in that regard. And what I found interesting watching the game on the weekend was that it seemed to me like O'Reilly and Turnbull in particular really struggled on that pitch. Turnbull found like he was just really, he's not the most agile, Turnbull, and he just looked really labored in his movements, and when he was trying to turn, he just looked very slow. And O'Reilly just had a pretty poor game, actually. His passing, he only completed 25 passes, and it was only 61% accurate. He never won the ball back, which is not, you know, usually part of his game, big part of his game. Only 5 recoveries, that's usually a good part of his game as well. But having said all that, right, he still created 4 chances, and Turnbull created 2. So they still managed to add some value to the game. I still ended up with, you know, XGs and XA, expected assists, not that much worse than anybody else. But they were the 2 players I thought that really, really struggled on the pitch. In contrast to the 2 fullbacks, and maybe it's because both Turnbull and O'Reilly are, you know, 6 foot. They're quite big guys. Maybe that's got something to do with it. Whereas the 2 fullbacks, small, quite nimble. You know, Juranovic is really quick, low center of gravity. Taylor is actually quite athletic. I know he's not quick, but he's as he told us on Celtic TV, he's the 5K champion at Celtic, which I thought was pretty impressive. So he's quite an athletic guy in that regard. I thought the 2 fullbacks were excellent, and they seemed to be able to move around the pitch really quickly and get involved in the play and close people down. And they were very instrumental in a lot of the build up. They actually were way more involved than Turnbull and O'Reilly were. So I think it had different impacts on different players, to be honest. But as a rule, it does reduce the quality of the game for sure.
Well, it's anybody who's played in one of these pitches know that sometimes the ball can be coming straight to you, and then there's just this odd little bounce that it takes, and it's up over your foot, and that is in the players' minds. It has to be when they're taking their touch or taking their shot.
Normally the lines are proud on the pitch, aren't they? They actually stand up on the pitch. The lines of the ball hits one of the lines, it bounces up at you.
Yeah, it's just it's more difficult, I would say, to play in. So I'm not going to drag us into the Sky Sports typical debate of should there be plastic pitches in the SPFL or not. But it is a factor that you have to build into these games. Just before we move on to the transfers, we mentioned Greg Taylor there, man of the match again in this game. Jota singled him out for some praise as well in post-match interview. James, look, we're not going to touch on the Burnaby situation because, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. It's all within the club to deal with it and how Ange wants to deal with it. But even if you factor out the Bernabeu situation, Greg Taylor has really pushed himself on in the first three games of the season, it should be said.
Yeah, I think, and Alan can speak for himself, but I think generally we've both been effuse in our comments on Taylor really for the last year and a half. He's just done a tremendous job improving, and he's very well suited for the style of play that he's being asked to do under Ange. So I think he's just been terrific. I think that the issue is how he scales into Europe, and that continues to be my concern. I think he's an extremely solid domestic player. It's just that question of whether he's got that ceiling. And we've talked about that. That's about athleticism. Does he just have the sheer speed and quickness to be able to compete against the kind of athleticism that he's going to face at that next level or even two levels up? But yeah, as far as in a domestic game, I mean, he's just been exceptional and reliable and consistent and, you know, all of those things. So, he's just really fun to watch.
Alan, are you seeing anything that potentially could signal that he can scale it up to the level of Champions League this season? If he has some more improvements, you can't teach pace is the old cliche when it comes to it, but you can develop a faster football brain, you know, and that is almost more important than your physical quickness.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I kind of hate being so reductive to say that it really comes down to that lack of pace, and that's kind of what I've said for quite a while now, and I think it is my biggest concern with him, because if it was down to attitude, he would be no problem at all. Because what a terrific attitude he's got to learning, as James said, and to improving, and to stretching himself as well. You know, he led on a number of interesting metrics on the weekend, and I agreed with the manager of the match. I gave it to him as well. He had the most recoveries in the game, so that speaks to sort of anticipation and positioning. And it's actually quite rare for a fullback, because most recoveries are usually the centre-back and the central midfielder. So he led the way there with 14. He actually had the most completed passes by 19 of any player, which is, again, for a left-back. I don't know if you remember when the couple of times when McGregor played left-back, and absolutely dominated the ball. He like completed something like 120 passes from left back. It wasn't quite of that magnitude, but he actually had 19 more passes completed than McGregor, and that's from that left back position.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Create any chances? He had four secondary assists. So, you know, as well as that absolutely incredible pass through to Maeda to set up Kyogo's goal was the best example of that, really. And that was a great example of how Postecoglou wants to play, because Turnbull dropped into the wide position, and I think he stretched the defence. And then Maeda went in the field to where you might think Turnbull would be making the eight run. And then Taylor was inverted in the half space, played a beautiful ball. I think the Kilmarnock players were completely lost. They got, you know, they didn't react quick enough. They were lost as to where to be. So that was a great piece of football and a good example of what it is that we're trying to do. And Taylor was integral to that. You know, he had nine pack passes, which Jens and Starfelt absolutely dominated the ball when he came on to like a ridiculous degree. It was really weird. So he kind of led the way equally on that as well. So yeah, just a great all round performance. I mean, he topped the packing stats with 112. That's the next highest was actually the other fullback, Juranovic, as I mentioned, with 96. So he was well ahead of that as well. So, and that speaks again to him getting involved, getting on the ball, coming in field, receiving passes from the fullbacks, and then progressing the ball through the midfield. So in terms of him learning that role and really having a feel for it, I think he's done fantastically well. And like you say, I think, you know, it could be that his understanding of the system, his understanding of his own role within that system could be being refined to such an extent that the lack of pace, while still a risk, may be diminished. I mean, he's hoping, because I think he will be our Champions League left back.
I was watching this game on the Celtic TV stream, which was an SPFL stream with in-house commentators, and Alan Power in the Kilmarnock midfield got man of the match on that. And I was scratching my head. I was like, how is that possible? A Kilmarnock midfielder in that game managed to come away with man of the match. And then I found out after I tweeted about it that the game was actually on Sky Sports and Greg Taylor had received the official Man of the Match award for this game. So a bit of egg on my face there, but I was sitting there thinking, I could not believe that Alan Power, of all people in that game, had got man of the match. But look, a lot of business going on, a lot of news in Celtic this week. Some good, some bad. We'll touch on some of the transfers because the transfer window is closing fairly shortly, just 12 days left until it closes. The window will be shut tight, as Sky Sports like to put it. And Celtic seem to be...
Slammed.
It's slam closed. A literal window is slam closed every year. Sid Haksabanovic, I think that's a better pronunciation than earlier on in the podcast. Sid Haksabanovic, coming from Rubin Kazan, £5 million. Celtic were in for this player, or were reported to be in for this player before. He's a forward. He's a left winger, right winger. Number 9 if you want them, number 10 if you want them as well. A lot of players that Celtic have been linked with in this window, and some of the players that Celtic have brought in, like Jota, for example, are very flexible in position. James, you were looking at Sid Haksabanovic already. What do you think?
I peeked at him, so I haven't done any benchmarking or any of the stuff that I normally do. Yeah, I mean, he's been a productive player. Most of his minutes have been in Sweden, but he started very early. I think his first league minutes were in 2015 at age 16. So just that alone is you know, an interesting pedigree when a player reaches, regardless of league. And, you know, Sweden's a decent league. It's not like he did that in, you know, the Gibraltar League or something. It's you know, a pretty good league, all things considered. So to really start playing at age 16, 17, 18 and have meaningful minutes, I think is a good sign. You know, I'll do a benchmark. I don't want to talk too much. I'd say the only thing that I looked at a little bit of video, he doesn't look like he's got high end speed. It's probably what I would say. But he looks very good on the ball, very skilled player. So it'll be interesting. We've talked about this in the past with Ange's pedigree, and you know, I don't have much or really anything on him from a resource perspective prior to Japan, but at least in Japan, he liked to use flexible, particularly forwards. And we've seen that with the overloads and the dynamic kind of, as I joke, kind of motion offense, that, you know, the interchanging and guys really going all over the place. So I think it certainly makes sense in that regard, given that this guy has experience across that front line and maybe even as an attacking midfielder.
Was it you, Alan, that was looking at him then? I thought I read one or one of the others talking about him on Twitter today.
I know one other of James's really good friends.
I have a lot of them.
Yeah, this is one of your special friends. Did an analysis. I think it was Lost in the Half Space. So they did a lot of good work in putting together stats pack on him. Very interesting player. He got a big move to West Ham when he was only 18. You know, another one example of the English Premier League. Hoovering up young prospects. I mean, he did actually play. I think certainly had about not many, 6 appearances for them. I don't think he played in the Premier League at all. And then he had a loan out to Malaga, and so he's been to Spain. He had a couple of appearances there, not many. And then he got another big move to Russia, to Rubin Kazan, which is the same club that Starfelt played for. So Rubin Kazan got relegated, I believe, at the end of the season. And also with, obviously, the war situation, a lot of foreign players are essentially ripping up their contracts and leaving. So I think this is it seems callous to say it, but it's a really smart piece of business by Celtic, because again, this is a very, very different approach to transfers than what we've been used to the last 10 years. It looks like, again, we've got a club here who are in distress, essentially. We've got a valuable asset that we're not going to pay anything like the market value for. You said 5 million. I'm not sure where you're getting that from. I think it's going to be considerably less than that. He went to Russia for about 6.5 million euros. And I think we'll get him for a lot less than that. So he's been around a bit. He's had a lot of experiences in Spain and Russia and England. Obviously, Sweden, as James says, is where he's played the majority of his football. And when he's been in Sweden, he's generally been very productive in that league, which is probably a good indication that he'll find the Scottish Premier League to be at a level that he's comfortable at. So, yeah, I think it's very interesting. He's mainly a left winger, actually. Which again is kind of strange if you think of Jota and Maeda, but he can play. He has played on the right. He can play in the centre, but predominantly on the left. Does seem to be a bit of a goal threat, and his overall scoring contribution of, I think it's 0.44 goals and assists per 90 minutes is pretty good. Again, a player who probably at 23 maybe wants to find a home somewhere. He's been forced to move around a lot in his career. He's had big moves, big money moves, for different reasons. They haven't worked out. Not always his fault, especially in Russia. So it could be somewhere that's just looking for some. So he's looking for someone where he can come and really sort of put down a bit of roots and fully develop. So yeah, I think it looks like a smart. I like it because it's smart. It's a smart piece of business, taking advantage of a distressed company. Unfortunately, in the capitalist world we live in, is considered to be a smart thing to do. The other interesting thing is that he's actually playing in Sweden this season, which means he will have been playing all summer. So he should be match ready and good to go, which is another small bonus. But interesting, I don't know. Paul Brennan hinted in CQN today that, him coming in may be an indication that a big name is going to move. I mean, it can't be Jota because he's only just signed, and I don't think he can move twice in the same window or... I don't know if he sometimes has information. I don't know if that is the case. I've got no, I'm none the wiser really, but I would have thought if you are Mikey Johnson, you're probably sitting there thinking,
Yeah. The 5 million fee I saw on Twitter, I'm not sure if that's actually the fee or if it could rise to 5 million. I don't know. It said cut price, so it may be less than 5 million. Could that big name be Georgios Giakoumakis, by any chance? Could he be on his way out the door? There are several players linked with moves away from Celtic. We saw their Juranovic links to Atletico Madrid a couple of weeks ago. Giakoumakis is now apparently bringing in some interest. And James, I read your article on the Celtic Way about this, and I have to say, you're a turncoat, obviously a Rangers fan in disguise, and an absolute disgrace to the Celtic,
the human race, altogether. not just Celtic supporters, the human race.
And just finally, a calculator shagger as well. That's just the.
That's one of my favorites. Yes,
that's brilliant.
I fully admit to that.
as a teenager. You know, I've matured over the years since then. But yeah, you know, it's funny. The underlying thesis of the article has less to do with Jack Amakis, and it's actually touched on a topic that Alan and I have mentioned, I would say, in passing so far, Alan, on this show, which is, you know, how do you allocate performance attribution between the style of play, the manager, the relative disparity in financial resources, right? So I've talked about this goofy concept that I came up with expected trophy model. You know, that's kind of on a season long basis. And I've been conceptualizing some of this within the context of, you know, player performance. And so that was the underlying part of this, which is I think there's a reasonable case to be made that the situation at Celtic now with Ange playing the way that he does, given the financial disparity with the domestic league, is that the vast majority of competent strikers that play in that circumstance are going to post a certain level of production, right? It's almost like a systemic performance number. And there's going to be variance around that. And you know, I put it in the article, you know, finishing is a highly debated topic within the analytics community still. I have my views that they're not really relevant to this conversation, but is, you know, he has objectively been a really good finisher in his time at Celtic. The question is that inherent? You know, is he Robert Lewandowski? Because he's an outlier. You know, he's a guy, he's like the Steph Curry of the NBA, you know, guys that can just shoot incredibly well. There are those people. And so is Jack Amakis that ilk? I don't think there's much evidence of that in his career to date. So that means that even if he's an above average finisher, there's going to be some, you know, some variance, and there's going to be some movement there. So it's not a question of, do you want to get rid of Jack Amakis? It's a question of, if there's an English Premier League team that's willing to pay big money for him, in my mind, what they're buying, at least to a degree, because there's a lot of still unsophisticated clubs in England that spend a lot of money on bad transfers. If they're willing to pay, you know, if they're willing to give us 20.
Look at Ender's face there.
Well, right.
He was thinking the same thing as I was.
Right. Hopefully it's Man United and they want to spend 25 million on Jack Amakis, right? And what I'm arguing is that a big chunk of his production is not. And it's the same for Kyoko. It's the same for every player. It's circumstances that aren't in their direct control. It's how good is the opposition? It's do they have a competent manager that's putting them in a position to succeed and coaching them well, right? So obviously the player-specific talent is important, but it's part of this overall system. And my contention is that, you know, if someone's willing to give us 20 or 25 million, maybe even 15 for a player of Jack Amakis's pedigree, that – again, this is another contingency. We don't just pocket that money. This would have to be used. All of that money would have to be used to reinvest in, let's say, two or three players of that price range that we just spent money on Jota and CCV. My view is that that net benefit would be a positive one to the team and overall performance, particularly given the fact that as this latest rumored signing, I mean, we've talked about this recently. I mean, we're basically one, you know, torn hamstring away from James Forrest being our primary substitute on the wing going into Champions League, which, you know, I'm not going to speak for Alan, but that would be less than optimal at this point in his career. And one midfield injury from Moy being, you know, a very prominent player in that midfield at a Champions League level. And that to me is very concerning. I don't think those players are of that level. And for us to build depth, I think we still need to, you know, raise the floor with quality across the pitch. And if we can turn one player who's been good into two or three that would be of equal or comparable value and replace people that aren't of that value, I think the overall floor gets lifted. So,
yeah.
And that's to put this into perspective. So I broke some of this down this morning over my coffee. I went back and I looked at Yokohama Marinos's 2019 league winning campaign under Ange. And so they're in a very different league. They're in a flat kind of salary cap type league where it's much more, competitive from a financial resource perspective. So it's much harder for teams to go on any kind of, huge run of multiple seasons of winning. It's kind of like MLS or, some other North American sports. And, they had, I think it was 1.67 non-penalty XG. And they scored just over that, I think, in goals per game. We were at 2.3 plus last season, right? So that's three or four quality chances more a game. That's largely a product of the fact that we are playing much worse teams. So that those performance numbers get allocated to each player in a certain way, and it's going to boost their production. So that's basically what I'm saying is that if an EPL team wants to buy that and pay a lot of money for it, then God bless them. I think we should. There's all contingencies here. You can't be buying a horrible replacement. You can't squander the money on, another James McCarthy. Of course, it has to be done competently. So, but it was mostly to introduce this concept of attribution, the systemic piece and the player specific piece. And then the fact that we, still need to be smart as far as how we allocate resources.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Alan.
No, I was going to say, I despair when people on, and I'm not going to criticize any individual because that's not my thing, but when people use percentile rank in the Scottish Premier League, and they'll go, my God, look at Aribo, he's amazing, or look at O'Reilly, or blah, blah, blah. Well, yes, of course he is, because their clubs dominate to such an extent. And actually, I always use the example of, just to show that I'm even-handed, I always use the example of Aribo and Hitati, right? Anybody that watches Aribo knows he's brilliant at taking the ball up the pitch. He's not very creative, and he doesn't really look like he's going to score many goals, but he's in the 99th percentile for this attacking metric and the 95th percentile for that attacking metric. And Hitati was the same. If you looked at his stats bomb data, he was in the 90th percentile for all these things. And yet when I ranked him against Celtic players, which is a far more effective thing to do, he was way, 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 way down the bottom. So I think what James is saying there is you have to take all these things into account. That's a very sort of, maybe an extreme example. I mean, another example is Morelos. I mean, the reason Morelos will be at that club forever and a day is that no one wants to buy him. The reason nobody wants to buy him is as well as some of the off-field stuff, it's the fact that he's never going to be good enough to play for a good side, a really good top side. And therefore, you're really looking at, if you're thinking about the English Premier League, you'd be looking at the sort of bottom half. But what scouts are smart enough to realize when you watch him play, he needs so many chances to score. That when you're playing for a bottom of the table side, you actually need somebody like a Giakoumakis who if he gets three chances, he'll score two. Aside all the other things that part of his game are very limited, we know that, right? Whereas Morelos, you need to give him seven chances for him to score. So that you have to look at if you just looked at a scoring record and how many goals per game and all this sort of thing, you think, wow, he's incredible. And fortunately, people are still dumb enough to do that. So I think James is spot on in that in terms of looking at it in that way. The other aspect of it is just where Celtic need to get smart is just judging when is the right time to sell a player. Okay, and it might not be when we the fans like it. It might be when it's economically the best time to do it.
It's almost inevitably going to be at the time that fans hate it.
Exactly.
That's the point. So to rule by consensus would be insane.
Exactly, and to what James said, I don't have a problem with that, so long as in the background we've got a list of five targets all primed and ready to go. You're not going to get them all. There's going to be complications, but these five players are going to do a job that you want them to do, and you're ready to push the button to try and pursue them, and you're prepared and you've done the groundwork. So I'm happy for us to sell at the highest point in the market, if we then reinvest and get smart people in, because at the moment Postecoglou's hit rate is pretty decent in terms of getting people in.
Yeah.
So if it was given 20 million to spend from somebody, I'd be pretty confident that we'd spend that money wisely.
I'll give you two examples of Premier League spending that are in the news at the minute. Martin Gibbs-White, who spent the year on loan at Sheffield United last year,
is going to
Nottingham Forest for £40 million.
He's a good player, but it's just ludicrous.
Yeah, exactly. And currently, Manchester United are about to spend £60 million on a 30-year-old centre defensive midfielder. So there are clubs that are willing to spend stupid money. And I'll give the fan view, and I'll give my sort of consensus on it. The fan view, for me, and I can completely understand why people feel this way, is that Jack O'Marcus had a brilliant season last year. Potentially is showing the same signs that he's going to have a brilliant season again this season. He's a really likable character. He's a great player to have in your team and potentially could, you know, increase his value again this season if he has a good season in the Champions League. That's all very well and logical. That is absolutely fine. And none of us are even advocating that Celtic absolutely need to sell Jack O'Marcus at the minute. That's not what any of us are saying here. What we're saying is you need to sell the players at their highest point of value, not what Celtic have done in the last couple of years, by taking what I consider to be pennies for Odson Edouard and even less for Moussa Dembele and even less
and
for
Frimpong
Kearney,
and Frimpong.
Yeah, we are consistently dumbing ourselves down in the market because we're not selling these players at their highest point of value. We're holding on to them for one more year in the hope that they have a better season again next year and they increase their value even more. And surprise, surprise, that doesn't happen most of the time. So I'm not ruling out
the potential that Jack O'Marcus is a late bloomer. That does happen where something clicks when guys turn 27, 28, or even 29. So it's plausible that's, you know, not outside the realm of possibility that he's all of a sudden going to turn into an elite finisher and it's going to be durable and it's going to sustain. The question is, what are the probabilities of that happening? How can you kind of project that? And, you know, the idea, again, if you would have told us, 6 months ago that you could sell Jack O'Marcus for 20 million or 18 million or 15, whatever the number is going to be, which based off what you're saying, for example, I mean, that would not be a lot of money for what's going on with some of these idiotic clubs in England. So, you know, for them to be willing to do that, I think it would be, you know, kind of like found money. I mean, I don't think Jack O'Marcus is that level of a player. Does he have value? Is he good at certain aspects? Yes. But a $20 million, I mean, that's what we said sold Dembele for. I mean, maybe the people that thought Griffiths was better than Dembele would argue that Jack O'Marcus is a better player than Dembele. But, you know, that's the price level that we're talking about here. And if you're able to get that kind of money and reinvest it and do it competently, all under the guise and the proviso that maybe that won't happen. But we're in a situation now where it looks like there's financial stability, where this kind of decision would be strategic. Right. So it's getting on the front foot and doing something smart because you can, not selling a player because you need to meet some kind of operating deficit. And so I think this is the kind of, you know, it'd be different if it was Sheffield United offering 7 million or 6 million or something. Right. That would not be that big of a, you know, I that would be a much more, to me, interesting discussion and debate about analytically whether that makes sense or not. I could see both cases being made. But for something like 15 or 20 million, I think it's cuckooville to if you've got your other ducks lined up, to say that he's off limits or something like that. I mean, maybe he's off limits because the offer's 6 million. I don't know. But if the offer's 15 or 20, to say he's off limits would be nuts.
Yeah,
I think we're in a slightly better position, and I think you're right what you said. But if you look at the last even 10 years, say, you know, going back to Van Dijk and what have you, is that Celtic, I would think, have got pretty good reputation amongst clubs in terms of where clubs have spent millions on Celtic players. It's generally worked out. Edouard might be a little bit of an exception, but Dembele's done great at Lyon, you know. Van Dijk, obviously, I think had a good first season at Brentford. You know, Christie was ever present for Bournemouth and so on and so forth. So I think Celtic have got a decent reputation. The clubs know if they buy players from Celtic that they're going to get value for money. But I think the market's changed as well. I think the Aaron Hickey Aaron Hickey's transfer and his success at Bologna, and then moved to Brentford. Doig, Ramsey, Bassi. I think all of those have really set the bar higher for Scottish players, or players from the Scottish league, should I say, in terms of perceptions around Europe. So I think we'll see some inflation on when Celtic do next, you know, sell a big player. I think it won't be the 12 million. It will be a much higher amount because of that.
Mm-hmm. So in conclusion, James, you're a prick who supports Rangers, and you're completely wrong about Giakoumakis.
I will admit that I have some cousins that are Rangers supporters. I have to admit that. I'm not going to lie. I mean, they're my cousin. They're my second cousins. My cousin married a Rangers supporter. As controversial as that was, it was back in the late 80s when it happened. So, you know. My 100% of my life is not pure in that regard. I apologize.
It proves my point exactly that, in my opinion. We're just coming to the hour mark of the fifth episode of season 3 of the Huddle Breakdown. So I think that's probably enough chat about Kilmarnock 0, Celtic 5 for this week. A big couple of weeks coming up. The first Celtic Rangers game of the season is not too far away, and the Champions League draw is coming up next week. Next Thursday, I think, is the Champions League draw. So a lot of news to come for Celtic over the next week or so. If you want to get all the chat, you can get us on podcast in your podcast app. If that's iTunes, Spotify, or Podcast Addict, wherever you get your podcasts, we are available there. You can get us on YouTube here if you subscribe to the channel. And if you want to support the channel in a different type of way that's absolutely free, not a Patreon, not a subscription of any kind, there's a link in the description below for the One Football app, which is our sponsor for the next couple of weeks at least. And it's a really good football app, has some XG, has some scores, has some news. Everything that you need in a football app really is available in the One Football app, which if you use the link in the description below, you'll be helping out the podcast. And we're also brought to you with footballprizes.co.uk. You might have seen a couple of prizes go up on our Twitter page. We'll be sharing another one probably tomorrow for a prize that you can win. I think it's a signed jersey. I think it's Juranovic this week is a prize that you can win on their website. So if you want to support the channel, support the Huddle Breakdown this season, that's the best way to do it. Alan, James, any final points before we finish up for the evening?
I would just like to say that people need to support you gallivanting across Europe. That's really what this all comes down to. So,
well, you see, I say supporting the channel. What I really mean is supporting my next dinner in a fancy restaurant, you know? So that's where the money's going.
Now, other than that, all I'll say is it'll be interesting to see what kind of debacle Hearts comes up with strategy-wise to play us at home on Sunday.
Yeah. Alan, James, thanks very much.
Take care.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game. It's all about the game and how you play it. All about control. And if you can take it, all about your debt. And if you can pay it, it's all about pain. And who's gonna make it? I am the game. You don't wanna play me. I am control. No way you can shake me. I am heavy debt. No way you can pay me. I am the pain, and I know you can't take me. Look over your shoulder, ready to run like a Cleveland bitch from a smoking gun. I am the game, and I make the rules. So move on out, you can die like a fool. Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be. Come on over, circle, why don't you ask me? Don't you forget there's a price you can pay. Cause I am the game and I want to play. The game and how you play it, it's all about control.
and if you can take it, it's all about your debt, and if you can pay it, it's all about the pain. Who's gonna make it? I am the game. You don't wanna play me. I am control. There's no way you can shake me. I am your debt, and you know you can't pay me. I am your pain, and I know you can't take me. Play the game, you're gonna be the slave. You're gonna change your name, you're gonna die in flames. Time to play the game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.